extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Tommy Scoops. Tom Bogert is back. It's an absolute joy to have him, and we need him on this June 10th show, talking all things designated players ahead of the summer transfer window. Who's got open senior spots? Who could open them? Who should spin big and who probably won't? We'll get to all of that with Tom. Plus, All-Star voting ends, I believe, today. So if you're listening right now and you haven't voted, pause, do it while you're listening, et cetera, et cetera. MLSsoccer.com is the spot to vote for the MLS All-Star game presented by Targus. Plus, we have some big news and notes. Another coach let go the third of the season. Nico Estevez is out in Dallas. What does that mean? And then news that maybe didn't get the headline it deserved. Tim Bezbachinko is leaving the Columbus Crew, and there is front office shakeup. All that and much more coming over the next hour plus. Tom, what's up, man? You are refreshed. I can see it in your face. I can feel it in your mustache. Cancun did you right.
What's going on, Weeby? First of all, oh, man, I thoroughly missed having this live interactive of the, oh, it just warms my heart. It you know, all's right in the world. Just looking at you on the recording here and talking that. Back from Mexico.
That people hit that, like, 30 seconds ahead button and mostly miss the so I just kind of feel like I'm doing it for myself, but I appreciate that you're sticking around for that. No, how was Mexico, man? You were over there, I don't know, you were shaking the transfer tree, so to speak. Plus, being a public speaker.
Yeah, a little few days at Transfer Room Cancun. Had a lot of fun. It is blazingly hot in Cancun, as you might expect, and then spent a few days air quote off, even though the Scoops didn't really stop while I was off, but that's okay. You can do that from the pool with your phone. So that worked out. I was delightfully in a Mexican cave, a cenote, as you would say down there, with no phone service, no Wi-Fi, nothing. Didn't do the international plan. It was glorious, just floating around in a cave. Nobody could call me. Nobody could text me. Nobody could yell at me on Twitter. I was free, man.
That's beautiful. That moment, I could just imagine you sitting down and think, okay, do I click the button where I am going to get the international plan, or do I say no? Do I essentially, like, do I go buy the snacks and put them in my pantry, or do I avoid that at the grocery store altogether? Because if you buy those snacks, if you got that international plan, there was no chance that you were going to be able to abide by any of the phone usage limits that you would have given yourself. So congratulations on that moment of self-control. Had a wonderful weekend myself in the Catskills with the family, went and waited around in some streams, played with some, you know, try to find some trout, didn't exactly succeed on that front. I'm going to guess the 3 and 6-year-old boys yelling and splashing around me were not very helpful in that sense. But it was a relaxing weekend to unwind during an international break, although there were 4 games played in Major League Soccer. We are not going to talk about them in any depth whatsoever. And that is not because we don't respect the points picking up, or that it's not important that New England got a home win against the Red Bulls, or that Kansas City got the job done against the Sounders, who seem to be spiraling just a little bit, or that Minnesota and Dallas drew, or St. Louis and Portland played reportedly a soccer game, though I cannot confirm looking at the stats and the passes completed in St. Louis, a city park. I'm just going to say, if you took something positive out of this weekend, congratulations. Don't take that as an indication of your future fate. That's not what happened here. You got 3 points. Kansas City, congratulations. This is probably not the start of something bigger unless you make it so when everybody is actually available. And if you had negative outcomes this weekend, New York Red Bulls, et cetera, man, don't take those too far with you, but that's a failure. That is a failure on your part, and one that you may regret down the line when playoff seeding comes around. Let's dive in, though. Let's get into the real stuff, and that is big changes in MLS. One, I'm looking at all the All-Star voting pushes, and some changes need to be made, Tom. So what changes would you make? What are 2 guys that have to be there? Give me some rage bait right now.
Robin Lud absolutely has to be at this All-Star. Like, I would be very upset. I'm not going to be naive. I fear that there isn't really a chance that he's going to get the fan vote to be in the starting 11. But dear God, he should be, if we're just doing this as a meritocracy, as it should be. And also, Christian Benteke. I understand that Luis Suarez has had he's a deserving candidate as well. He's probably going to win that vote over Benteke, But for me, like what Benteke has done with DC United, puts it ahead of Suarez and the name recognition. Not that Benteke's a big star as well, but not quite to the level of Luis Suarez. So those are the two that I remember the trademark Tom Bogert mad if they're not there.
I would say between Suarez and Benteke, just in sort of the aesthetic part of this, I think I would take Benteke simply for the reason that this is an all-star game and chemistry is going to be, you would expect, lacking a little bit between all these guys. And we saw that obviously with Arsenal last year, though the last Liga MX all-star game against MLS was a little bit different, more competitive. I think just having Benteke as a security blanket in terms of play is could be very useful in this sort of format. It's like, God, guys, what do we do? What do we do? Just knock it off this guy's head and put like three runners around him to try to recover the second ball and go. It feels like that could work in an all-star format. Feels like Robin Lode would be absolutely impeccable in that system as well. Two guys that I'm just going to be hopping mad if they don't find a way onto the roster, though if you read my column on MLSsoccer.com, you know that I am team entertainment value ultimately in all-star games. So while I want guys to make it who deserve it, I want that 11 and all the guys that play just to be the biggest stars who can have the maximum enjoyment for me personally in the game. But if Emeka Nnelli and Adelson Milanda do not make this roster, we have failed. The meritocracy is dead, Tom. It's just smothered before it could even start. So I need to see Emeka and Milanda there, two of the best young players in the league and two guys that are absolutely driving good teams in Charlotte's case and great teams in RSL's case forward. Okay, let's dive in. Nico Estevez is out in Dallas. Assistant coach takes over. Estevez, 28 wins, 27 losses, 28 draws. I mean, that is like the definition of bang on 500 since taking over before 2022. Right now, FC Dallas are 13th in the West. Obviously, they drew in Minnesota this weekend. Made the playoffs in 2022 and 2023, but it has been pretty miserable in many regards this year. What was your initial reaction when we found out Nico Estevez is out, becoming the third manager to lose his job in MLS in 2024?
Why did it take this long? Honestly, this isn't a surprise. The only surprising aspect for me is that it didn't happen a month ago. All of the problems that this team has had this season are a continuation or even a worsening of what it was last season. And this came with a new club record, $10 million center forward, right? They're dead last in MLS in expected goals. They are 26th out of 29 in field tilt, 23rd in shots, 27th in XG per shot, 22nd in attack speed, 24th in direct, like 25th in passes per defensive action. It's just everything is slow, plotting sideways. And it was a confirmation of what the issues were last year, which is why I would have pulled the ripcord a little bit earlier. I think for those listening that know me well enough, I'm not one who comes on this show or other shows and does that. Oh, you need to fire. Cause like, I think that's too easy of an out, but like this clearly wasn't getting fixed. I gave him I can't believe I fell for it again. Honestly, like I was looking at this roster. I was looking at the new formation. All the pieces made sense for what Nico wanted to do with his game model. I was like, oh my God, like they're going to be fun. I genuinely thought they're going to be fun, not just good. And like, I feel like an idiot. I look like an idiot, but it's just, I don't know, man. It got to the point where it was a real lift for me to just watch this team. It's just, no, there was no hope. There was no results, really. And it's just really disappointing.
It was two steps, I should say, past ponderous. And I was with you. I heard Nico describe how they were going to play. I saw Dante Seeley in preseason. I was, I'm a Bernie Camungo stand till I die. And I was just like, okay, you add Musa to this. Dallas is investing. Obviously, Jesus Ferreira is, you know, a very, very good player in Major League Soccer, whether it is as a second forward or dropping into the pocket a little bit or running in behind. He has all these roles he can play. And wow, the way this looks and feels should be fun. And so I blame you, Tom Bogert, for probably in the group chat infecting me with your optimism, which is not exactly your normal emotional state, let's just say. But then when you watch it, first of all, you have to just, the facts are here. Jesus Ferreira has only made 6 starts so far this year. So that's an issue. When your best player is not available, you're going to have issues. But I just look at some of the just sort of the basics on this team of like, okay, the midfield. You built around Yaramendi and Paxton Pomykal. And almost like in a theory, and this is why it sounds fun, in theory, you're like, okay, well, I can see some similarities of these teams that play this 3-4-2-1 or however you want to describe it, and the way that those two midfielders are able to build the game and then advance and break lines. And okay, these guys can do that, but then that's like suspending reality in your brain, you know, because Yetamendi is just not going to be durable enough to hold up. And as much as Matt Doyle would hope for it, Paxton Pomykal, you know, God love him, he just cannot stay on the field. So is it a surprise then when you lose both of those players that you're down? And then really, it's Nkosi Defari, Sebastian Ibiaga, and then just huge question marks on the back line, across the entire back line. Marco Farfán was injured to start the season. I thought he would be a perfect fit at left wing back, maybe even could play left center back a little bit for them. Just wasn't really around to start. And then Tafari lost the faith or whatever it was from Nico and even got benched. I'm like, he's your best center back. Yeah. He's really the only guy on that back line that can play with the ball and help you create the patterns of play and the triangles that you need to allow the central midfielders to get the space and the time and the angles to move the ball forward. And Bernie Kamungo he wasn't a right wing back. He wasn't ready for that role. He wasn't ready to be thrust into this massive moment. And it just didn't work. None of it worked. Now, again, speaking of missing players, you didn't have Alan Velasco at all. Yeah. You haven't had him at all. So, you know, I understand where Nico could look at this and say, like, hold on just a second. 2 years ago, I was, you know, in the top four of the Western Conference. We were third place. The last year, yeah, we dropped down a little bit, but our defense has been good. But you're right in saying that it's the degradation of just the attack and the quality of aesthetic soccer that you're watching and that you're showing your fans at home. I think that ends up being the reason why he's not there. And it just, the trend is going the wrong way over the course of multiple years. And now it's sort of back to the drawing board.
Well, could you imagine, I guess, being Peter Musa? Like, what, like, and again, I believe that Nico, if he could have his way, if things were going well, he would want to play much, much more expansive, right? Like, I get that. I get that sometimes you have to be pragmatic, particularly when you're fearing for your job. And that's absolutely what the last 2 months have been, because their possession has ticked down. But I'm sure Nico, Andre Zanota, everybody that Peter Musa met in Dallas, when he was deciding, am I going to go to the Serie A? Am I going to go to any one of a number of clubs were trying to sign Peter Musa? Dallas ended up winning. Like, he probably bought into, we're going to play fun. You're going to pair really well with Jesus Ferreira. Hey, Alan Velasco is going to miss the first half of the season or thereabouts. And then when he gets back, like, he's going to be, they probably sold him on this expansive, front-footed, attractive style. And then he gets here and he's like, what the hell is this problem? Right? Like, I mean, I just think that's the biggest indictment of this team. Yes, the defensive issues are real. A little bit self-inflicted by Nico Estevez in benching Nkosi Tafari, who's their only good center back for me. But this team should be more fun. Like, that doesn't excuse them for being so boring and so slow and so methodical and so ponderous.
And if you're not fun, you better at least have a game model on the road that can get you more than 3 points from 9 games. They haven't won a single game on the road.
Yeah.
Six losses away.
Yeah, and if you're not going to be fun, like, you have to be Gary Smith's Nashville for over the past 4 years when they were getting a ton of results. Like, that, first and foremost, it's a results business. So if you're going to be not fun and not get results, man, the clock is ticking.
All right, well, let's take a look at where this could go next. It's hard to imagine FC Dallas being a club that goes out and gets some super high-profile guy from Europe, for instance, or even a club maybe that, like, a guy like Ronnie Dyla would say, hey, like, this is where I want to be. I'm gonna come here. Now, maybe things have changed. Maybe Musa is a sign of shifting sands and a willingness to say, okay, well, we're going to go get that big player. We're going to go spin, and we're going to do that in these DP spots and U22s as well. And, oh by the way, we're also going to, you know, augment that with our academy and bring players through. I don't see Ronnie Dyla in the same way that I did in the most recent opening jobs and say, okay, he's probably going to think that's where he might want to go. To me, it's more of a guy that can marry, you know, more aesthetically pleasing soccer, but also getting back to sort of the bread and butter, which is developing players, making them better, being a place to launch from, but then also having the likes of Areola and Legette and Jesus Ferreira, et cetera, augmenting that group so that you're not just like, hey, a developmental team. We're a team that develops and wins. We're the Philadelphia Union that spends more.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're transitioning to the coaching search, as I believe that was, one name to watch from what I've been told is Eric Quill, He's currently at New Mexico United. He's got New Mexico United in first place in the USL Championship Western Conference. He was the North Texas SC head coach when, you know, the likes of Ricardo Pepe and some other really highly talented young players were coming through. And from what I was told, he was a finalist in the last coaching search that ended with Nico Estevez. So Eric Quill is still highly thought of at FC Dallas, and he's somebody that is absolutely going to be in the mix for this one. And like you said, like any MLS team with a vacancy should be calling Ronnie Dyla. Like, it's just, that's what it is, right? Like, I don't think that Gio Savarese fits here, but that's kind of my view on him as well. There's assistants around MLS, Yohan DeMay in Columbus, FC Cincinnati, Kenny Arena, and Dom Kinnear. I think he should be in the mix for some of these. I don't know if he would leave as an assistant, but hey, everybody would rather be a head coach for the most part, right? Then there's, you know, Antti Razov and Mark Dos Santos in LA. These are just some of the ones that come to mind when it's easy to deduce that, oh, like these are probably the guys that are going to be in the mix. And Robin Fraser, I forgot to add him as well.
Yeah, let me throw a couple names out there if we're going to go into the assistant rank ranking pool. And they're probably long shots, probably never happen. Javi Moe in Miami feels like a guy that could be here, very familiar with sort of the academy setup, whether it's from his own son or being in that world down in Miami. Anthony Pulis is a guy that I think could have some shouts here very soon, given the way that RSL game model is working out. But he just got to Real Salt Lake, so I would expect them to say, hey, back off. Like, you know, the project is sort of maturing as we speak. Let us have some time.
One thing. What if they pivot and instead of Anthony Pulis, go with Tony Pulis and then just lean into the proper route one, mate?
No. I'm out on that, though. It is interesting.
Just had to see how that was going to land.
Yeah, dad goes by Tony, son goes by Anthony. That's a good differentiator there. You don't want to throw the junior on too much. Yeah. Look, I think Eric Quill is a great call, and I think of Troy Lesane sort of following a similar pathway from New Mexico United to MLS. Not in the same sense that he went straight into a head coaching job, but proved that he had those sort of chops at Red Bulls, and now I think is doing a pretty darn good job at DC United, despite the fact that they've got some, you know, still some roster issues that Ali McKay and Troy are working out to this day, which we might get to a little bit later. But Dallas got some changes that are going to be made, and they did it in the middle of this international break. So for the time being, Peter Lucena will be their interim manager and assistant moving up to that position as they try to figure out what the direction is for the club going forward at the very, very top end. Same thing goes for the Crew, but they got that figured out quick. That's what happens when you got a bunch of succession planning happening and a bunch of great candidates already in your front office. Tim Bezpachinko, the man who helped built that Toronto FC juggernaut, then went to Columbus, did his thing in his hometown, got the stadium built, got the training facility built, got an MLS Cup in the belt after poaching Wilfred Nancy, has left to take a position with Black Knight FC. If you're shrugging your shoulders saying, now hold on. What is Black Knight FC? Think of it as an investment group that invests / owns a number of different clubs around the world. So Bournemouth in England is one of those clubs. Auckland FC in New Zealand. Lorient in France. Now, I'm not going to say this right.
I can tell you were worried because you tried to rush through Lorient like it was a speed bump, and you just tried to be like get through it. Mesh this all together.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it was. It's like when you know, when dad's driving and he's like, you're like, hey, that's right there. Boom, and you bottom it out. That's where I was at. I'm just going to call it Hibs in Scotland. So here's the quote from Tim Bezpachinko in the press release, just to give you an idea of what he's doing here. Quote, modern football requires taking a globally integrated approach with cross-border player transactions integral to creating sustainable success. But that is a mouthful of buzzwords there.
I want to throw up.
Quote, I look forward to working with the leadership across BKFC's clubs to facilitate player development and player movement to optimize, had to get that word in there, a collective team performance on the pitch as well as with our commercial teams to deliver a world-class experience, ding, 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 for our supporters and partners. Partners listed second. Now we're joking around here because this is a press release quote, and it is what it is. This is what Tim should say, and you can kind of get a feel for what he's doing here. But ultimately, he is overseeing sort of best practices and raising the collective tide at all these different soccer properties around the world, and it's an amazing job. It is absolutely deserving. Yeah,
my internet cut, and I thought that you paused. I was going to say to quickly interject. Tim Bezpachinko, I promise you all, is much more interesting than that quote would lead you to believe.
Yes. And the job sounds incredibly interesting. and like a huge step for Tim to, you know, keep going on this career ladder that just keeps rising and rising and rising from the MLS, you know, the MLS player department to Toronto and then to Columbus, where he did some incredible things and has all the trophies to sort of prove that. And now into the Premier League in part and other leagues around the world where he can, you know, where he can be a leader, I think. And that's the biggest thing for me with Tim Bezpachenko. And that's what brings us back to the crew, which is Tim is very good at finding and developing and empowering talent. And I don't mean players. I mean other professionals, other executives or junior executives or people that have a specific skill set that can affect and improve whatever organization he's in. There are myriad examples, and we'll just focus in this case on the ones that made the most sense for the crew, which is Issa Tall. Issa Tall, who helped him build this thing out at Columbus, is now the GM of the Columbus Crew. And Issa was one of many, Tom, in that organization, and many who have left recently for other jobs, and deservedly so, that's just logical, who developed and reached a different height or were given the platform to reach that height under Bezpachenko.
Yeah, Issa Tall is extremely well-respected around the league. He was an obvious candidate for, okay, the next CSO jobs that open, he's going to be interviewed. It's like, you know, him and Ricardo Moreira is another name that was in a bunch. Ali McKay, who obviously ended up getting the DC job. These were like, okay, they're obviously the next to get a job. Ownership in Columbus are pleasantly surprised that Issa Tall gets to step into this role. Their assumption was, we're not going to be able to keep him for very long, and we're not going to stand in his way if he was to get a CSO job somewhere else. But they really didn't assume that Bez would be leaving at any point, that Issa Tall would still be at the club. So in one hand, they are happy about how that turned out, because obviously the club love Issa Tall. They think that he is the man to lead them into this next new era, and it's going to be on him a lot, as well as Mark Nichols and the head coach Wilfred Nancy, because, as I'm sure we'll get to, Corey Ray was let go by the club as part of the shakeup, and chief scout Neil McGinnis, who his player identification eye is really well respected around the league. He previously worked for Celtic. He was the person who scouted Virgil van Dijk and brought him there before he went to Liverpool, before he went to Southampton. He left to be technical director at LAFC. So you look at that front office, who 6 months ago around MLS Cup, I was saying, I think this is the best front office in the league. Like, there are five guys who I think could be sporting directors, or at least in the mix to be a sporting director. Three of those are gone now, including the Tim Bezpachenko, who was the architect of this group. And as you said so eloquently, Weeby, he helped empower and develop these guys, right? So now you're losing a lot of infrastructure, and that's just sometimes the organizational cost of success. You just look around, like, this happens on rosters all the time. Like, John Thorington talks about it with LAFC. It's so hard, like, success to, like, keeping that up in the salary cap, because obviously players get pay raises and they get other offers, right? It's the same thing with front offices, and Columbus are dealing with that right now.
What do you think the future looks like in the immediate sense for Columbus as the transfer window comes up? It feels to me like, though there isn't a ton of wiggle room within the roster, it's more sort of massaging. What do you think Issa Tall's first sort of order of business is? Is it just to keep things going?
Yeah, so this is low-key semi-pivotal summer. I think pivotal would be too strong, because there's so many key pieces in order. But I believe that there is a very strong market for Aiden Morris, and he's had more than 100 appearances in the first team, despite his debut season was the COVID-shortened season, so there were less games to go around. And then the next season, he missed all of it with the torn ACL. So Aiden Morris, this would be the time that he would leave. If I had to guess, I'd assume that real offers come and he leaves, right? Like, so they're going to have to, they could have to replace him. Patrick Schulte wants a new contract, has interest in Europe. That's a big piece that they have to try to re-sign and find room for under the cap. And then there's that open DP spot. What do you do with it? Like, I guess you wait to see how it shakes out with some other players, but do you go with a sick central midfielder to replace Aiden Morris with a DP spot if he does indeed go? Do you go for another attacker to just add to that already stout group? Alexandru Matan has been asking for a new contract all year after MLS Cup. So there are a lot of decisions to be made. Again, like, you have Cucho, you have Diego Rossi, you have Wilfred Nancy. You have a great foundation, but there are more than a few things kind of on Issa Tall's to-do list to start.
multiple international spots open. They can open that DP spot by buying down Darlington Nagbe, who's currently in that slot as a Tammable player. And then a U22 initiative spot open as well. And Matan is a U22 player. It'll be very interesting. Now, speaking of interesting, we sort of glossed over it. The Corey Ray news was very, very surprising to me,
yeah.
Tom, because Ray is very well respected as well around MLS circles. And he has an eye for talent and an eye for bringing in talent, maybe not through the first team that impacts the first team. Much of his work was done with Crew 2, and we know the success that that team had, not only in players moving up and impacting the first team, but also in the sense that they went out and signed Laurent Courtois, and that seemed to work out pretty well for them, so much so that Montreal wanted to snatch him up. Now, Tal was asked about this in his press availability afterwards, and basically said, we're trying to go a different direction with that team, and we're trying to go younger, and that is so surprising to me, given that, one, just in mass, it's going to be very difficult to put together an MLS Next Pro team out of just academy players with the quality you need to advance that number of players through. And it ignores so many of the successes, or maybe not ignores is not the right word. It downplays so many of the massive successes that this Crew 2 team and Corey Ray had as well in terms of identifying talent to bring through the second team that will eventually impact the first team. And it's not like bit part players. It is Patrick Schulte for a year out of the super draft at Crew 2. It is even more, I would say, like notable, Mo Farsi being snatched out of Canada and signed to a MLS Next Pro contract and developed and now is one of the best wing backs and such a perfect fit for the profile of the system that Wilfred wants to play. It's Max Arfston, who was an absolute shocker in the super draft, not drafted out of college, drafted out of MLS Next Pro. Jason Russell Rowe, taken out from Toronto. Another big one in that. I mean, I didn't think of even like Sean Zawadzki or Philip Quinton in the time that they got at Crew 2. There were just so many clear examples for this team of guys that they were able to develop through Crew 2 who were sort of found not a needle in a haystack, but sort of like, oh, hey, nobody else seems to be recognizing how to use this pathway in a way that not just credibly, but incredibly impacts the first team.
Yeah, and like part of this, like obviously we need to give credit to Wilfred Nancy because they produced some of these players when under previous regime and they were kind of stuck in the second team. So much so that there was kind of a joke with a couple of people in the organization at training sessions. They'd say, oh, the better players are over on that field training with Crew 2 because like Caleb like wasn't using them in the first team, right? Like, so got to give Wilfred Nancy credit because you can produce whatever you want. If the coach isn't going to play him, they're not going to play him. But to your point, like, that's a lot of successes, and a lot of which that weren't necessarily obvious. Like, Mo Farsi was, like, he really became, like, a guy that we knew with Crew 2. Patrick Schulte, like, he was ready to take the job or challenge Aloy Room for the job. Like, this all happened under Corey Ray, who was the Crew 2 GM while also being assistant GM to the first team. That was also Issa Tall's technical role for the first team under Bez as well. So maybe there was a little bit of awkwardness with two of them being assistant GMs. And then again, talking about Mark Nichols, I think his title was technical director, like all these are all the same. It was Bez and then four guys under him with like Neil McGinnis as well. So there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen, to be fair. So maybe that's a little bit what's weird. But yeah, as you say, they won MLS Next Pro. And they also, more importantly, brought several players into the first team and produced their second team head coach to go get an MLS job. So I'm not exactly sure what other philosophy you want than that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Corey Ray, you wouldn't think will be waiting around too long. Mm-hmm. A phone will be ringing for him, given his successes and his experience and his reputation. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I will say when I broke that news last week, I immediately got texts from people within MLS being like, what the hell happened? Like, are you kidding me? Like, it was hugely shocking to people within the league that this happened.
Well, Crew, keep on keeping on. The level is incredibly high. And as you mentioned with John Thorrington, keeping it there is often the more difficult part. San Diego's got to figure out their level, but they signed Chucky Lozano while we were gone, or at least I was gone. Club's first designated player, Tom, reported $12 million transfer fee from PSV. Reported $7 to $9 million salary. We'll see if that's true when those numbers come out through the players union. I was personally shocked by that number and thought, you know, it's not, I don't really care how much you spend on a DP spot. I just want to see production. I want to see a game changer. Yeah. And Trukey can be that. He can be. He'll be 29 when he arrives to play for San Diego next year. He can play all across that front line in different positions. So I understand why you make a signing like this, particularly with his positional flexibility as well as his, you know, not just impact on the field, but also impact off the field. That matters for an expansion team and any team for that matter. Where does this land for you? How good is this move on a scale of this is straight from Anders's mouth here, on a scale from Shaqiri to Vela, where does this land?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about this move. I've had some people push back on me when I said that I think this is a really strong signing, in that people say, hey, Trukey kind of already had his best days, but like, I don't know, man, like, he's gonna be 29 when he debuts for San Diego, so that's still technically in his prime. Yeah, like, he didn't score 15 goals in Serie A for Napoli when they won the league title. And like, yeah, he, you know, I think he had like 1,500 minutes or something like that for PSV this year while they won the league title. Like, I don't know, man. Like, for me, how much better can you realistically hope for in terms of a profile, in terms of a pedigree, everything else? So, again, 12 million, I think that's very good from the club's ambition. I was a little bit worried that they were going to, they're leaning into the right to dream. They have big ambitions for youth development and the academy and everything else. So I was a little bit afraid they were going to be like 2019, 2020, 21 Red Bulls, where it was just, you know, players under 24 in the entire first team, and mm-hmm. that they weren't going to spend a ton of money, or that they were only going to use this as a development vehicle. So going for Trukey Lozano, that's a, we want to win while we develop. So I really like that. I think that's super positive. You mentioned that he can play in a couple different positions. I think he can also play in a couple different game models. I'm sure that they have their idea of what a game model they want to be, but they still don't have a sporting director and they still don't have a head coach. But I think that Trukey Lozano can fit across a multitude of different game models, and they're obviously building this around him. So I think almost a no-brainer for a first signing. Like, I don't see a huge risk in this.
You have to have a face, too. You do.
Yeah.
And when you're an expansion team, you need to have that face. It's all well and good to have your crest and your idea. We are San Diego, you know, FC, whatever. But you need to have that face associated with it. And I think Trukey is a good face for that club in particular to have associated. I will also add, and I'm not trying to make like-for-like comparisons here, Denny Bawanga is 29 years old. Denny Bawanga didn't go, you know, blast 20-goal seasons on the reg in Europe. But he didn't. Like, he didn't. And so, you know, saying that, okay, well, just because in Italy this happened, at PSV this happened of late, means that Trukey Lozano is not going to produce an MLS, I think is the wrong point of view. It's not a guarantee that it's going to happen, but we see repeatedly in this league that your pedigree, what you did at XYZ league, is not always the indication of what happens in Major League Soccer. It's more about fit. And it's more about the environment you're in and what you're surrounded by and how you're used. And I think using Trukey Lozano will be something that San Diego will figure out. And he'll be a very good top-level winger in Major League Soccer. And I could absolutely be dead wrong, which I have been many times in the past. We shall see. All right, let's dive into to a little bit of fun in this show. We were looking through the club roster profiles, which are now public, and it's so much fun to just go through and see what teams are spending and how they're spending on it, how they're allocating roster resources in terms of senior roster spots or international spots, and even more so designated player spots and TAM and U22. It just gives us, Tom, a platform on which to speak with credibility, because for so many years we were doing this show and people covering the league were sort of having to work off napkin math a lot of the time, or, hey, my source is telling me this, or I figured this out, or I was looking through those MLS, you know, Players Association numbers, and I'm pretty sure this guy is TAM, but it wasn't in the release, so I wasn't entirely sure. Well, now it's all right there, and it gives us a place of clarity to come from. And we know what senior designated player spots are open. So let's go through them. Let's talk through them, what could happen, what we think should happen. And then let's start with the big one in Atlanta, because I know the release is not out. It's not press release official, but Georgios Giakoumakis he's gone. Yeah, he's outie. He's going to Cruz Azul, yeah. $10 million.
Yeah, that deal's agreed. So just last I checked in on this, just the final steps, like the final details of exactly when he's leaving and the medical and literally signing contracts. But the framework of the deal is here. This is something that's going to happen, barring something super bad happening. So yeah, Giakoumakis is gone, and they have to replace him, and I'm be really, really surprised if they don't sign a DP forward, right? Like, I think that that's really obvious. You don't need to have any sources to kind of deduce that. So that would be one spot for me for Atlanta.
What do you think they'll do in that spot? Is it as simple as Garth Lagerwey has told us and just believe Garth Lagerwey when he says, I'm going to sign designated players that generally are in a prime age profile mm-hmm. who have proven it in multiple countries, multiple leagues, because that tells me that they can adapt to Major League Soccer. Like, I'm going to go sign the, you know, the Lideros, the Rui Diazes, so to speak. Is that just like put it down on paper, exactly what we should expect here?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, look, Garth Lagerwey might be the most accomplished sporting director, general manager in MLS history. I know that he's technically club president right now, so that's not exactly his role, but he got that way because of, in large part, this philosophy. Those Seattle teams with Lodero, Dempsey, Rui Diaz, all that, like, that's his philosophy. Like, again, I don't want to throw out names and just, yeah, like, everybody should go sign this player, but, like, he's going to be looking for a guy like Cucho Hernandez. Like, Cucho played in England, he played in Spain and somewhere else before he came to Columbus in his prime, his early prime, and they spent a big fee on him. Like, that's my assumption of the kind of profile that Atlanta are going to be looking for that center forward.
Interesting that they're doing this at the same time they're looking for a new head coach as well.
Yeah, I will say they didn't plan on losing Yakumakis. They were in very, very preliminary contract talks a couple months ago. Did not go very far, because he's got, whatever, several years left on his deal. They didn't think that there was urgency. And then Cruz Azul came in, turned his head, and then it was like, yeah, we'll see what they bid. Like, what, you know, what I heard is that they kind of set the price, like, hey, if $10 million comes in, whatever. Like, there was no guarantee that Cruz Azul was going to bid $10 million for a 29-year-old who's had a few injuries this season and last season. So this wasn't a planned departure. This was this deal kind of has to happen.
And in some ways, I think the timing, while not ideal, sort of made the decision for you in some ways, the way the season is going. Like, if this is an Atlanta United season where they're flying, they're top of the table, and it's like, hey, if we lose this guy, our championship hopes are severely degraded. Well, then maybe it's not 10 million that your number is. Maybe it's 15 million. Maybe it's 20 million. Maybe it's, hey, I'm hanging up the phone when you call me. Like, this guy's under contract. We don't care what you offer us. We're trying to win a title. And that's sort of the ethos and the tradition that Atlanta are trying to get back to right now, and why Gonzalo Pineda ultimately lost his job, is that it just wasn't up to the level that they expect and that the investment sort of demands. So I think there's no doubt, like, they got to go sign this number nine. Right now, the depth behind him is Daniel Rios and Tiare, and, you know, no offense, that's not Atlanta United level ambition, or at least what we've been told is that level of ambition. So, big summer.
And again, like, with these players, like, they're fine options. They're really great that those are great numbers options. 2 and 3 and your depth chart. But, like, this reminds me of a story from Charlotte FC. Like, for their first head coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez wanted Titi Ortiz at attack. He's like, this is the guy I want. And they, like, internal discussions were like, if you really want him and you really believe in it, we'll make the signing for you. But just before we do, he's going to be this 10. New England has Carlos Hill. Nashville has Hani Mukhtar as, like, a second part, right? Like, you kind of went down the list, and then it's like, and then Titi Ortiz, right? Like, so no disrespect for Tiare and Rios, but look at the DP9s that are at the top of the table. And, like, that's the difference.
All right, let's keep it moving. Charlotte, speaking of, good transition. Nice segue from you. They sold Enzo Copetti, so there is a senior designated spot open. Also, like many teams, they have a tameable player currently occupying a DP spot. That's Breck Diagne. Who, you know, look, we'd like to see that other DP spot filled. I thought Kalen Carr.
Were you tased in the middle of that? When
no, but I like. I think that's the way you say it, and I like to say it that way. So yeah, it just has a. There's just a real, you know, both rhythm and lack of rhythm to that. Look, I thought Kalen had a really good take on this show last week when they were talking about designated player spots, and I've been thinking for a while that what Charlotte has proved, not just to all of us who pay attention closely, fans, journalists, observers, etc., but I think just to everyone around Major League Soccer, is like, if you don't like your DPs, you can take the L and move off them quickly. You just have to be willing to take the L, both in terms of, like, public opinion, but more so in terms of finances. Like, you aren't stuck with DPs, and they have proven that. You might have to take an L on the transfer fee you paid for them. You might have to take an L in terms of buying them out of their contract. But it's not a situation, realistically, where you can sit around and be like, hey, we're bad and our DPs are bad, but we have no options. We can't do anything about that. Well, you can. You just got to, again, take the L. So Charlotte took the L on a couple players, opened up DP spots. They've got that senior spot open. They tried to go for a number 10 in the winter. That didn't work out for them in the end. What do they do now? Do they go for one DP? Do they go for two? And if they're going for one or two, what's the hierarchy of need in terms of positionality?
Yeah, Charlotte is probably one of my favorite teams to watch this summer in terms of the transfer, because they could go in a lot of different directions. For me, it's pretty obvious they need a DB10, but from what I was told, it's DP9 is a top priority, and that's where they're focusing on after, you know, Marco Royce was proven to be not coming, right? Like, so DP number 9 is the top priority. They could add a second DP. Swiderski, Hela Sharona didn't trigger his option. I'm assuming that they're going to find another exit for him. I'd imagine they would prefer this to be a permanent one so they don't have to deal with this every 6 months. But that still needs to happen. That's another thing they need to do. So they could add two DPs if they indeed push Carol Swiderski to find another deal for him to leave. They can add a U22 initiative player. I believe that that's the plan this summer, a young attacker. And they can add a Tamish player. Hello, Tim Ream. That deal, as I reported, is very, very close, or it's getting there. And again, barring unforeseen circumstances, I think that's going to happen. So that would be the first step in their summer transfer window, which again could go in so many different directions.
Tamish. I really like Tamish. Leo Abada is a good signing. Like early returns are, age profile is, previous production, XYZ. I mean, he seems like a very astute signing by this club. And it's not just because I'm a Pat Agyeman Hive originator. I just love this dude. I understand why they would say we need a DP9, because Pat has created and been on the end of a lot of opportunities this year that have gone unfinished. And I'm happy to say that. He has so many tools in terms of like his ability to sort of manhandle defenders, use his body really intelligently. Clearly, he understands, you know, runs in space at a not an elite level by any sense, but at a good enough level to be in the right place at the right time pretty frequently. But if you are trying to be a championship level team, which by God, every team in this league ought to be trying to be that. Otherwise, what are we doing? Then yeah, I can see DP number 9. But come on, you got to be able to create chances at a higher rate as well. And I think going for both would be the most logical move. And maybe that's more so like that you're going to go get that midfield player in the U22 spot, but then you can't put massive expectations on that player jumping straight into Major League Soccer. So, you know, I think you already have sort of that profile in terms of, oh, hey, if we were going to get a U22 signing center forward and they played like Pat Agyeman is playing right now, early in his pro career, I think you'd call that a great signing, right? So to me, I mean, I understand the number 9 desire, but I'm like, man, go get the 10. Go get the guy that you can build everything else around, that you can build your nine around. That's where the 9 signing comes in down the line.
Yeah, I will say that, like, I do think that they need both. Again, if it was me, I would be prioritizing 10. But, like, if Agyeman gets hurt, who's playing center forward? Like, Yuri Tavares? They like him better on the wing. So They did take a risk in agreeing to sell Capetti when they did that. Hey, if something happens to Agyeman, or like, what if he just stinks for 2 months? And like, they were very confident he wasn't gonna, but hey, there's an outcome there. It's a non-zero chance, right? They were going to be pretty screwed because there aren't any really other options to turn to. Again, Yuri Tavares, but they like him on the wing. So they definitely need another player up there. Again, your point, best case scenario, you sign a DP9, sign a DP10, but for me, the more important need is chance creation and attacking midfield. And with Abada, as you say, I think that's been a very good signing. I also think he's somebody who has enough of a work rate that's why that they felt confident in, if we can convince Marco Royce to be our 10, he can kind of have the keys to the attack. Like, we trust Abada defensively against the ball enough that we won't have multiple passengers. And again, that's probably mean to Marco Royce, who was just playing in a Champions League final for Borussia Dortmund, a team known for pressing and work rate. But if they go get a 10, that's more of a classic kind of playmaker, they can carry him because of the work rate of a player like Abada, who is their club record signing right now.
Either way, no matter what happens, I really enjoy Charlotte as a project right now in Major League Soccer. And it had some real speed bumps, to go back to your analogy there off the start, had some real failures. And that's not surprising, I would say. I think expansion teams that come out of the gates without those things are among the blessed few. And if you have those, the only thing you can do is change direction, is be willing to rip that Band-Aid off, to say, hey, I made a mistake, and well done to this organization from ownership down, to just be like, you know what? We screwed that one up. For Dean Smith to come in and be like, hey, not my dude. Let's get him out. For, you know, Zoran Crneta on the front office side to say, okay, well, we'll find a solution. Here we go. All right, Leo Labata, we're going to have to pay a pretty good amount of money for this guy, but hey, it's a good deal because this is the current situation he's in at Celtic. They're doing some special stuff. When Privet and Milanda and Ajiman and all these different players who are developing and making moves, it's awesome. There's just another level. I just want them to go out and try to reach that level, and it seems like they're going to in the summer. Minnesota now to have another level to reach. They have a DP spot vacated by Emmanuel Reynoso. Off to Tijuana he goes, and they also have Robin Ludd on TAM who they could buy down. Reindeer Flotilla, who goes by at Dave Rance Party, a lot going on with this person, says, any rumors on who Minnesota might be looking at to fill the one or potentially even two DP spots in a third U22 spot? Tom, I'll tell you this right now. This team has to figure out how they can control games better with the ball, to build attacking chances with the ball instead of off sort of second ball drop downs and direct play, set pieces and big switches. Eric Ramsey knows it. The organization knows it. They've got to be able to do more with the ball. So with that DP spot, my indication, midfield. And I'm somewhere in the midfield, whether that's a traditional 10, okay, maybe you need it, maybe you don't, because Robin Ludd can clearly play in that position and be effective. Maybe it's more in the 8 or 6 position, in the sense of like a João Paulo or a Obinna Nwobodo, who elevated already good teams into a different echelon.
Yeah, I like that shout. And a quick kind of sidebar. The rules that have not been officially announced yet that it's going to be changed is teams can have 3 senior DPs and 3 U22 initiatives. There are no kind of restrictions on that, but you could also opt for 2 DPs and 4 U22 initiatives and a little allocation money in addition to that. Minnesota, I feel extremely confident that they're going to be a 2 DP for U22 initiative team. Like, everything about Khalid El Ahmad, Eric Ramsey, what they want to do, they want to be a high energy team, a young team, a developing team. And everything that's been great about their start to the season, they want to double and triple down on that. So I'm assuming that this is going to be the 2 DPs, right? So one is Timu Pukki, and then they could bring in another as Robin Lode can be put down with him. And then they would have more room on the U22 initiative as well. So we shall see what the kind of budget is that comes in from ownership, because U22 initiative players are expensive too in terms of acquisition costs. I'm very intrigued by this squad. Again, I can't say enough good things about their start of the season.
Would you consider buying out or selling or whatever it is, taking the L, so to speak, on Teemu Pukki at some point here?
Yeah, not my money, so that'd be easy. yeah, I don't know if I see that on the cards, just truthfully. And I don't, if you're talking about offloading him without a buyout, who's matching his wages? And power to the players. I am pro player. Get every dime that you sign in that contract. Like, do not take a discount to, you know, convenience a team. But that being said, I don't know if they're going to use, I don't think that they would use a buyout on Pukki. And I don't think there's going to be a team that matches his money.
It wouldn't be this summer, right? This is more of a like, hey, if it just continues, the form is what it is throughout the year. Okay, then maybe you might consider something like that. But I, as much as, go back to my Ajiman hype, I've got a ton of Tani Olesheyi hype as well. But you don't want to, if you think you're going to have a chance, let's say to finish in the top 4 of the West, which I think Minnesota has a chance to do, and be in a position to go try to win something, you can't just sort of tie your hopes and dreams onto a young forward. It's valuable. It's useful to have Timu there because, look, that form could explode. If you go get, in particular, another player that helps you play with the ball a little bit more, I think that's where Teemu Pukki is going to be more comfortable than the current situation that they have, which is we need more of a physical presence up top, which he isn't necessarily at this point in his career. So I think having that change up in the bag and having a guy who could conceivably come in and be a volume scorer as well, despite the form right now not being there, is extremely valuable. So we'll see what Minnesota does. How about Montreal? Montreal! They have one DP, Tom. It's Victor Wanyama, who doesn't play, and he's tammable. What on earth?
It's so frustrating and disappointing. And I go back to the last season under Wilfred Nancy, when it was so obvious Georgia Mihailovic was gone. Alistair Johnson probably gone, right? Like, you looked at that team, and it was like our windows.
Ismail Kone was going to be gone. And all the transfer fees that came in, by the way.
Yeah. Your window was that season, and they didn't do a thing in that summer. And I don't know, man. We talked earlier in the show where I was saying I was disappointed in myself for falling for it again with Dallas, of believing in the optimism of what they do. I was mad. Like, it was that point where I was like, no, like, they don't get the benefit of the doubt on spending or anything else, or like bringing in players midseason, recognizing opportunity. I know it's much different right now because they are not in a good way in terms of form. But what would lead you to believe by the last 6 years of Montreal that they would actually do anything with these open DP spots? What, there is no evidence. There was Victor Wanyama. Is he the only DP that they've signed that wasn't from Bologna since like a decade, right? Like, it's
Georgie
been a long time.
Georgie was technically, I guess, a DP, but not a senior DP. It was tammable, right? And yeah. Struna, I barely even remember who Struna was.
Oh, classic.
And you go back, Saphir Taider, he was a good player, but that's
from Bologna.
Jamile, Bologna, good player as well, but didn't last hardly any time. Ontivero, which again, that is, I mean, I have a very deep pool of random useless MLS knowledge, and he's barely dipping the toe in the water. But then you go back and it's like, man, what, remember those teams in the early 2010s? And I'm working with Ignacio Piatti now, and I'm still scared to get close to him, because I'm like, he's just going to push the ball past me and I'm screwed. But there's not even a ball around us. But you just remember how quality Piatti was for 5 years. Didier Drogba, that signing that just lit the entire city on fire. Even to go Marco De Vaio. I mean, the first DP, Marco De Vaio, again, a Bologna signing, but Marco De Vaio was a baller. Where are the ballers? And if there's not going to be any ballers, how can we look Mathieu Chouinard in the face and say, I can't give you a raise? How's that possible?
It's a joke. And like, again, we go back to the organizational dysfunction. Olivier Renard leaves. Vasily, and I'm going to do the speed bump with you. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name at the moment. He was the obvious. He just give him the CSO job. Like, I've heard that he, like, jokingly referred to as, like, MLS Wikipedia. Like, MLS roster rules. Like, that. Like, that's what they would call him, because he's, like, they so specialized in that. And they named president their club president as the interim CSO. And again, I don't know if that means that they knew that Vasily was leaving, but like, Olivier Renard didn't have a lot to work with, did really, really good, I think. And then again, like, Vasily leaving as well, that's a brain drain in the front office. And those two, they were the two guys, right? So I don't know, man. I'm just extraordinarily worried for Steve Montreal. Like, I think about Laurent Courtois as well. Tough couple months here with everything that's going on with, again, the trade request for Mathieu Chouinard. Obviously nothing to do with the coaching staff. That was not front office, that was an ownership thing. Like, from what I understood, is that Olivier Renard probably would have been able to find a deal there for a new contract. So again, if you're Laurent Courtois, you watch the sporting director leave, the number two leave, one of your foundational players is requesting a trade completely out of your control. And guess what? We have three open DP spots and we're not going to use any of them.
Schreiner's base salary is $275,000. You go look at the other salaries in that region, and some of the other salaries around the league for all-star quality number eights. It's not in the same region.
Boyhood club, all that stuff too.
A lot of issues.
Stuff,
a lot of issues there.
That is the most obvious contract extension that I can really think of. Yeah. And again, I want to put out there, especially
Tom, if you're not going to spend, going to go spend on designated players, you need somebody who, one, can bring a high level and be reliable every week, who understands the ethos and the basis of the club and loves it. You need that player. We'll move on. Red Bulls, they have an open designated player spot, Tom Bogert, the New York Red Bulls. And God bless them for going and getting Emil Forsberg. It has changed the way that they're able to play with the ball. They still are a team that wants to, that wants to get it and go direct and go quickly, but he changes their capabilities. I said on a recent MLS countdown, just sort of looked into the camera because this is just still rankles me. There should not be a team in New York that has an open senior designated player spot. Not even just like, hey, we don't have a guy in there that we're tamming down. They have an open DP spot is an affront to an organization in the New York area, but more importantly, forget where you are. I don't care where you are. You could be in any freaking Ohio, Idaho, you know, to go back to our pandemic, you know, dream team episode. You could be in Ohio. You have to go for it. If you have not won MLS Cup in your history and you have a literal curse named after your failure in this regard, you have to go for it. You have to fill that spot. In particular, because you went and signed Forsberg, because you have this next level that it's clear that you can reach, that these players can help you reach. Go sign somebody. Tom, tell me that this team is going to go sign a designated player that can impact their top end, that can go make them even more credible MLS Cup contenders.
Yeah, I was told that's the plan.
Let's go.
There were links with Timo Werner. Those were real. And that, like, again, baby steps in terms of investment and stuff. And, like, I was just glad when they signed Corey Burke as a free agent, I was just glad they went and signed a player who wasn't 21 or, you know, from their second team or something, right? Like, little things like that. Like, they skewed way too far in that direction of youth development and, like, we're just going to be a U24 team, essentially, right? Like, plus Aaron Long at the time. That was really disappointing. So I was super happy when it was Emil Forsberg, and you could, kind of take away, be like, ah, oh, you know, came from Leipzig, moving money from one pocket to the other, whatever. I was of the opinion, hell yeah,
who cares? It was exactly the first time that had happened with a player of legitimate, like, top-level quality. Like, that was a great sign. That was this could be the, like, Forsberg, go talk to your boys. You're having a great time. You're living in New Jersey. You're balling. Lewis Morgan's my bud. Like, whatever it is, go tell them that this is sick, that they should do it. That's a competitive advantage, man.
I agree. And like, well and truly, this team is, I would have them as, like, outer ring kind of contenders. The way I view it is that there's, like, the inner circle of Miami, Cincy, we'll see how Columbus, assuming Columbus, right? Like, LAFC when Drew comes. And then there is, you know, another six or seven teams that they could make a run in the playoffs. This is a team that could make a run in MLS Cup. I think if they sign the right DP forward, I could move them up into, like, these are some of the favorites coming to the playoffs.
Are you locked in on forward? Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. But again, I could, like, I don't know, like if you were running the search, where would you be looking at, say, another attacking midfielder / winger? Or would you be looking center forward?
I think it's a question mark as to what
Morgan
can
play either way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to me, Morgan has been much more effective in those front two roles because I just don't know that Van Zier or Manuel or Burke or any of those guys really want to stretch the field. And that's what Lewis Morgan just has this urge to get in behind, to test the back line, to understand, okay, here's where the gap's going to appear. This is how our pattern of play goes. Bing, 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 bing. And I'm going to be the guy that times that moment in behind. So I would love to see him stay there because we've seen a different, incredibly productive side of him there. But I also think he could be very, very effective next to Emil Forsberg. And then you're saying, okay, well, then we'll go get another one. Then you have another question down the line is what do we do with Dante Van Zier? Because Dante Van Zier hasn't always been a first choice player for this team. And given his profile, where he sits on the cap, I kind of think you need to be that. Like we've seen around this league, if you're a DP forward that loses your job, and I'm not saying Dante Van Zier has, but there's another level that you have to reach to get up there with the best of the best, then maybe your spot, it's a question mark. We don't know that you're going to be here forever. So part of me thinks attacking midfield to let Morgan stay up top. But if you're thinking long-term and in the sense of like what gets us to the very, very highest level that we can be at, which is, again, what they should be thinking about, then it's probably a number nine.
If, for me, I think that's the short-term view as well. I totally agree with your long-term, again, with Van Zier. That's a problem for another day. I think that you just add a DP and keep the squad as is, and then look, if you reassess in the winter. But I think short-term, it's still DP9 because, look, Morgan's had an awesome season. I do not want this to sound critical or dismissive or anything. If you're going into a playoff game against Columbus, and Lewis Morgan and Dante Van Zier, you're starting center forwards, what does that do anything for you, right? Like, I don't know. Like, so I would want to have a more, again, like a DP9 that you can write. Again, it's easy to cherry pick the best examples, but a Yakumakis, right? Something like that.
Yeah, but now imagine it's we're just going to use Yakimakis as a stand-in. Like, don't take it literally, folks. Just take it as an investment. Or let's just take Cucho. Let's go back to Cucho, right?
Even better.
Yeah, let's say it's a Cucho and Van Zier, and now Van Zier is much more comfortable in that sort of like, I'm just as comfortable sort of playing with my back to goal, but not just in terms of hold-up play, in terms of combination play, and I can get turned, and I can play that pass in between forward, and now it's Forsberg and Morgan in behind. And it's Cucho and Van Zier or Cucho and Manuel or whatever, or Manuel coming off the bench. It's just the variety of danger that you can provide is all of a sudden so much different. And my mood has improved dramatically just by you saying that all indications are the Red Bulls are going to go do this.
I thought it was by you just seeing my face on this.
That started the trend, but this has further cemented it. Now, Vancouver is the only other open DP spot, senior DP spot we see open around the league. Vanni Sartini was on this very show, and I pushed him on it, and he said, I don't think we'll make signings. I don't think it'll be a DP. I guess that is what it is, but I'm frustrated by that as well.
Me too.
I would like to see that be the case. Let's just say they're going to go sign a senior DP. What sort of position, what sort of profile could be a good fit for this Vancouver team?
Another attacker. And what I really like about Ryan Gold, because I'm probably going to be a little critical of him in this Vancouver discussion, what I really like about Ryan Gold is he can play several different positions. His work rate, you'd think he's a homegrown number eight, right? Like the ground he covers, the stuff he does against the ball. So if you want to call it a 10, a second forward, or like a winger, right? Like Gold can float in and be really good in any other role, right? Like, so whether you like Demir Krylak, just much better in their prime, right? That's what I would view for this team. What I'm concerned about with this team, the underlying numbers, stylistically, super, super surprising for a Vanni Sartini team with players like Ryan Gold and Brian White leading the attack and some of the other kind of assets they have. Passes per defensive actions, dead last in MLS. That's essentially how often are you getting into duels? How often are you winning tackles or getting into tackles, interceptions, whatever? So they're not on the front foot in that way. But they're
which
dead Manny, last.
Which Manny told us, to be fair, on the show. Yeah. He said, look, we're like the only team in MLS that's not sort of a man-marking concept in the sense that, hey, this guy comes in your space, go get him. Or this guy moves here, go get him. Go apply pressure. We're spatial. And so in a spatial system, it would see, you know, most players are used to the opposite. So it would be, you know, that makes sense to me in some ways.
No, and I agree. But in conjunction with dead last in attack speed and second to last in direct attack. Like, you have Ryan Gold and Brian White in your attack, and you have Pedro Vite, who's a through ball specialist. They should not be so slow. Field tilt is 24th in MLS. That essentially means that they're deeper, but they're not hitting teams in transition or, like, not regularly enough. And again, it's very surprising to me, just given the players that they have at their disposal.
I agree. And you've seen a little bit of a change recently because it seemed like Vanny was like, hey, this 3-4-3 thing is not working. And he had tried to play Fafa Picot on one of those wings. And then you have more of a goal dangerous guy who can also stretch, so you can play into. That's supposed to be direct. They've gone back to that 3-5-2, whatever you want to call it, with Gold and White up top. And maybe that just makes it, maybe that simplifies things of like, this is the way we get forward through the wing backs, through some ball progression in the midfield, but mostly the wing backs and then White and Gold are going to be the pieces that stretch the field and get forward.
I'm very disappointed in how this evolution has happened with this team. I think they were, you know, the people's favorite last year. Wonderful story. Everybody loves Vanni Sartini. This winter, their signings were Demir Krylak and Fafa Picot. Those were their attacking, air quote, difference makers. And again, not to be dismissive of these two players, but it's just not enough when you have the resources under the salary cap to make bigger differences. And again, I don't know. I could have a guess on what ownership stance is on the budget, but it's still very disappointing to me that this team was primed to be a top four team in the list. And they had the open roster space. They had the open salary cap mechanisms, and they did nothing with it this offseason, or not enough, I think I should say.
Well, I'm also disappointed. I'm on Twitter right now, and I see that Charlotte FC have released the shirt of the summer with Serminti's face on a leisure shirt. And if this is not on the way to Tom Bogert, Woody Wilder, then we have truly failed in everything. There's not a single thing that we haven't failed. What we have something for you in the studio, actually, from Charlotte, Tom. So Andre says, await that with great joy. I know there are two very large Sermenti pendants awaiting for my sons. So I'm very excited to deliver them directly to the two Weeby boys.
Hell yeah. I have a Sermenti cape that I just wear around the house, I think.
Exactly. All right, let's jump into some mail and the tameable options around the league. We'll do this rapid fire. How about the Colorado Rapids? We had Matthew Wick hit us up and say, for the Rapids, what's the likelihood of Navajo on a TAM deal to open a DP spot and potential targets if so? So first of all, can they keep Hafa Navajo on TAM? That would probably require Palmeiras to be not asking for a ton of money on the transfer fee.
Yeah, that's how it'd be. I had talked about this at some point recently. I didn't even know that this was on the table. I didn't even know this was an option. So I thought that there was no way to make it tangible. And that's their goal. That's what they want. I would probably say 8 weeks ago, they were more hardened on, you know, hey, if we can't make it on a TAM, that is what it is. And maybe that was just a negotiating point. And then I think he scored, what, 4 or 5 games in a row? And I was like, all right, maybe this won't, like, we'll see. And then obviously, you know, hey, maybe he could be worth like a lower DP. Like, right. Like, so that's what they're trying to do. I have an answer around on this front. It's getting to be urgent. Again, Palmeiras, they had no leverage. Their leverage is to wait, right? Because they could always accept a lower deal. So they played it well, I think. He's not going to play for Palmeiras, but with this goal scoring rate, plenty of teams in Brazil, I think, would be interested. So we'll see what happens there. This is another team I'm dead certain is their goal is going to be two DPs for U22 initiatives. I don't think that they'll be able to do that immediately this year just because of the structure of some of these deals, particularly Kevin Cabral. I think in the winter, they'll be able to have him not be a DP, and then they can do the 2 and the 4. So that's kind of the future look for Colorado.
What should we call that? 2-4 TAM? Like, how do we like...
2-4 game.
Which, you know, like, are you a 2-4 TAM team? Are you a 3-3, 3-3 nothing? Like, what's the... We got to come up with something here.
I like 2-4 game.
All right, let's keep it moving. Houston Dynamo, they have Eric Sviachinko, who's tamable, and everything... All indications are that they might be about to surprise some people with that possibly the DP9 that they desperately need.
Yeah, that they're working on it, and the goal is to have it done so the player can debut immediately as the window opens in July. Again, but this has been an ongoing search, and then the other side of that as well, they could open another DP spot if they do indeed offload Sebastian Ferreira, which is... if goal number one is signing a DP9, goal number two is offloading. So you say Sebas Ferreira. And then I was told a little bit to my surprise, just because they signed him to a new contract, Coco Karaskia, it's not a guarantee that he doesn't leave. Again, whether it's this summer or next winter, and again, it's not something that's active. And I get sick of hearing myself say this because I 3 windows in a row talking about how Coco Karaskia was definitely going to get, like, felt obvious to me. I think that they would accept a little bit of a lower deal, which opens the pool of more teams that should be signed. Again, I'm biased. I think that there are a lot of teams in Europe that can benefit from Coco Karaskia at whatever price point it may be. But that's, I guess, another thing to look at. And then it'd be, okay, if Sebas leaves as well, can we add a DP attacking midfielder, DP 10 or whatever? Because I know that he plays that this kind of specific to this game model role of the, like, invert, like, half space winger / attacking midfielder and, like, the box midfield there. So all that is to say, DP9, and then maybe something else.
God bless you, Houston Dynamo. Get that number 9 deal done. Just, I'm a very simple person in that sense, and that I want to watch every single team try to be their best version. And yeah, they need that 9 to be the best version. We saw the style of play and what they can do without it. Now, what can they do with it? Should be really fun. How about LAFC? Do you think they could go make another DP signing this summer after Giroud? Because Edward Atuesta can be bought down.
They can. And, dude, like, I'm out of the business of trying to predict what the hell LAFC is going to do. Even when I think that they don't have room, or even when I think that they're going to go younger, or, oh, maybe here comes a veteran. Like, man, they find a way to spin the cap, and they find a way to fit every single dollar that they can in this team. So all I will say is, yes, they can sign another DP. No clue what they're going to do. Maybe they surprise us and go, you know, 2-4 game. But yeah, LAFC, they seem to always be a team to watch in every transfer window, whether you think that they have spots or not.
So is Miami. Think they could go do something? Leo Campana could be bought down.
Yeah, for me, this is the most obvious team in the league that should be doing the 2-4 game thing. I think it's catching on, by the way. I like it's the the most obvious because every single year they need allocation money to buy down all of their kind of TAM deals. So they should just get it from the league rather than having to trade Kamal Miller every year or Robert Taylor or insert the
DeAndre
next person.
Yedlin, Yeah.
And they currently have four U22 initiative players because Facundo Farias is on the season-ending injured list. Like, that'll be a little bit awkward in the winter if they go 3-3, but it's Massey and France. I think that they're going to go 3-3, even though I feel really strongly that they shouldn't.
3-3, 2-4 TAM. 2-4 GAM. I screwed it up right as I was about to say it's really a game of team, but we'll get there. We will get there, folks. It's all about repetition. I will come out and say RSL. I hope they make the move that they've been intimating.
Yep.
Matt Crooks can be bought down. So we had a bunch of mail from folks, you know, Tanner, Jaden, Jeffrey, what's up, guys? Hitting us up and saying, hey, can we go get this guy? Can we go get a DP10? I really hope that this organization does it. And to go back to what we're saying about being your best self, being your best version, so many of the decisions that they've made over the last few years really jive with that, whether it be just ownership deciding, hey, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to come in, we're going to make this happen. Okay, now we're going to spend close to $20 million over a course of a couple windows when we're a team that are not expected to do that. Okay, great. We're going to get Chicho. Awesome. All right, well, you know, we like Pablo. We think he could be elevated even more with a change on the staff. We're going to pull that trigger. Like, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult for everybody involved, but we're going to do it and see what happens. And it's worked. So I hope they do that on the DP front as well and go out maybe another piece, maybe a right back to the group. We'll see. How about St. Louis? Can I just like personally file them into impact DP now? Like, go get an attacking player that makes this team, one, more watchable, but two, gets them back and closer to the levels that we saw last year. I know Edward Louvin has been out for a long time and, you know, for obvious reasons and understandable reasons, and he can add a good bit of quality to this team. But right now it's like, okay, we're going to rely on Joe Klaus. We're going to put a huge load on his shoulders and then hope that Pompeu or Vasilev or, you know, Ostrak, who's, I think, injured now, and, you know, Adinerin, like, can somehow provide the push. Like, you know, I don't think that's going to be it. So I would like to see them go sign another impact player. How about some more here? Cincinnati don't have an open spot right now, but could they?
They will.
Aaron Bupenza?
They will. Yeah, Bupenz is going to be gone this summer.
There you go.
Stake a lot on that. And there then they'll bring in a DP center forward.
Beautiful. How about the Galaxy? They don't have an open spot. Are they going to fit Marco Royce in here?
They're working, man. They're trying their best to close the gap with what they have at their disposal. Again, as I said a few days ago, there is absolutely nothing agreed, not, let alone done or anything. They still need to figure it out how to creatively make this deal happen and kind of make him whole and without a TP spot. But nothing's done. Talks are ongoing. They're trying their best, but there's a lot of Saudi money out there on the table for Marco Royce, so we'll see.
All right. Let's end with this one and keep it moving for today. I know that we've gone through an awful lot, but Timbers and Tacos hit us up and said, to the Extra Time crew, how do we feel about the U22 initiative overall for growing the talent in the league? Has the league hit on more quality U22s or struck out? Is this the mechanism that we should rely upon moving forward?
I really like it. It's fair to say the hit rate might not even be half, right? I think teams are going to be smarter about how they use it. Aiden Morris re-signed to a U22 initiative deal. Julian Araujo from the Galaxy before he was transferred to Barcelona. I think that more teams are going to diversify that portfolio in several players from abroad and then maybe a couple homegrown players that you can pay more now and keep them for a little bit longer before they go abroad. This is, look at what Chelsea does, and not the best, you know, sporting direction to point to, but a team like Chelsea, with all the money in the world, they signed seemingly 40 players, like U23, and just, they hope five of them hit for the first team, and another 15 can be sold for not a loss, right? Like, it's very difficult to identify, recruit young players who are going to adapt to a new league and immediately make a difference. So I think that we just need to alter our expectations for some of these. And again, if you want to be a big spending team, a team like Inter Miami, Federico Redondo, $8 million or whatever it was. Diego Gomez, $3 million plus. Toto Aviles, $7 million upwards of that. Facundo Farias, $5 million. These players came in and made an impact because they put the money up there. These weren't $1 million deals for a player who, let's see if he hits. This was, hey, spending DP level money on this.
Yeah, I completely agree. And those are great examples. both in terms of the investment, but also the familiarity with the market, which you need to have. And obviously Tata and all his boys had, like, they knew who the next crop was, right? Yeah. And not only did they know, they could convince those guys to come and sell them on, one, thriving in MLS, but two, making a move afterwards. I mean, there's a big variety of hits and misses around MLS, and it's not just players, it's clubs as well. Atlanta United, bunch of misses. Ibarra, Mosquera, and Sosa. Miss.
Sosa and Ibarra were expensive as well. So, like, just spending more on a transfer fee doesn't 100% guarantee, but the more money you spend, the more likely the player is going to be an impact player immediately.
And look, Cincinnati's been a great team in terms of recruitment, but Marco Angulo doesn't seem like a hit either. But Kevin Kelsey has been so far. Yeah. But I think you really hit the nail on the head, at least from my point of view, in the sense of using U22 as both a place to go find young players from abroad, but also as a way to hold on to guys that, one, are performing in the league at a young age, but two, have value and sell on later on, and you need to have some roster control and contract security with them. And, you know, a guy like Cole Bassett's a U22 right now. Like, Brian Gutierrez is a U22. Aiden Morris is an absolutely, you know, ideal example of something like that. You know, you look around the league and there are guys that have been brought in at a small number and have worked out. I think Ibrahim Aliyu is a good example of that. And maybe Nelson Quiñones was for a hot second. Or like Dejan Jovetic might be arguably the best example in terms of a U22 number nine right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the best way to put it, that like there are inevitably going to be misses. There are DP misses. There are young player misses. There are veteran TAM player misses, right? Like, that's just the nature of this. And again, the age profile and a lot of these players being brought in from abroad, there are a lot of different ways that these can go wrong, even whether it starts with that talent identification or if it ends with players just didn't settle because they're young players coming into a new league, a new country, all that stuff. So there are going to be a lot of misses. I think that teams are going to get better at how they strategize with this. And I think, again, maybe this is just naive and maybe this is just too optimistic. Continue to get better with player identification and continue to get better with deal making.
As always, you can just take the L. All right, that's it for us. Big thanks to you, Tom, for coming in and lending your unique mix of insight and speed bump knowledge. Thank you, my man.
Cheers, brother.
All right, we're out of here. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll be back on Thursday. Adios. We'll be right back.